This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The staff of the Ocracoke Health Center have learned to be self-reliant, and that is not unlike the tiny island community they serve. But the health center is among the most isolated clinics in North Carolina, and no degree of self-reliance can solve the many challenges that come with providing health care in a place like Ocracoke. I'm joined today by Rose Hoban, founder and editor of the North Carolina Health News and the author of a recent feature on the Ocracoke Health Center. Welcome back to the show, Rose.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
Fascinating story. How did you come across this story?
Well, I've been friendly professionally with the guy who's the editor of the Ocracoke Observer, Peter Vankovich. And for a couple of years, Peter had been saying, you know, there's a good story out here. You should come out. And so we had an invitation from some friends to go out to Ocracoke over Memorial Day weekend. And I thought, oh, this is a good opportunity to go out a couple days early. Called Peter. He said, come on out. So I went, and don't think it was a vacation because, like, Peter ran me. He made me work.
Yeah. So, and you give us some of the challenges that you confronted.
Well, I mean, first off, it's that whole thing about getting to Ocracoke, right? Like you drive to Swan Quarter or whichever ferry you take, and then it's a couple hour ferry ride, right? And so that was the first thing that they talked about when I talked to the people at the center, that the isolation is a big challenge for them. Now, during the summer, they said that they could, you know, have their population blossom to as many as 10,000 on a busy weekend, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 during the week. But during the winter, it's down like between 10 and 1,200 people on the island. And so, when you talk to Peter, who is not a native, but he's been going there for 30 years and lived there for about not quite a decade. I remember him saying to me, that first storm when the last ferry leaves the island, like, it's a really isolating feeling. So that isolation that people love and go to Ocracoke for is also, you know, presents some challenges for the folks who live there.
And the boom and bust in the population and how you fund such an isolated place, which, as you say, has a year-round population of somewhere around 1,000, many of whom probably are without insurance and probably need the services of a health clinic, when you might have 10,000 people the other week. So you've got to be staffed for both, and you've got to be funded for both, and I'm guessing that's a problem.
Well, that was one of the things that the clinic director, Cheryl Balance, talked to me about, that their doctor, Dr. Baker, like, during the summer, she's like seeing patients really fast, get them in, get them out. And during the winter, it's like, let's sit and spend 45 minutes on your diabetes, and let's talk about a treatment plan, and let's talk about your diet. So the locals get a lot of individualized attention during the winter, which is great. During the summertime, then they're a little bit sort of, you know, miffed by, like, oh, yeah.
Who are these people?
Right.
Well, as you mentioned, Cheryl Balance, who is the CEO at the Ocracoke Health Center, and she's joining us now. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you here. So we're now at the height of the tourism season. How many patients a day are you seeing?
We're seeing probably about 30 patients a day. That doesn't include the nurse visits and lab visits or any other kind of a treatment visit that doesn't require the physician. So we're pretty busy right now.
What do you do for staffing? I mean, how do you staff up for this and then gear down in the off season?
We essentially don't usually add extra help during the summer. It's not cost effective because, you know, the cost of living here on Ocracoke is basically high because we're living in this resort area and we're paying the same goods and services that the tourist population pays, which is understandable. The local vendors have to earn also in that short period, which, you know, roughly lasts from like mid-April to mid-September. So we kind of take advantage of maybe student nurses. We've been very fortunate. There's been two that have grown up here on the island and come back in the summertime between their schooling. So we've been able to use them as like medical office assistants. That's just been happening over the last few years. But really, everybody just has to put their multiple hats on and get out there and work a lot harder.
A lot of multiple hats. Talk about all the responsibilities you take on to keep the doors open.
Well, we have a very strong focus on our quality right now. So everyone works on trying to help patients, you know, improve their clinical outcomes and trying to make them as well as possible.
And so we'll talk about the different healthcare needs. Are they different, the visitors to the island, let's say, those who come, you know, in peak season, and are the needs very different, the medical needs very different from people who are there year-round?
Yes, during the summer months, we don't do a lot of, you know, chronic disease management like we do during the off-season, but we are seeing a lot of injuries, minor injuries, acute flare-ups of some chronic illnesses. And we do have to remind people, our patients that come in the summer, this is not your year-end treatment point. You know, for critical problems, you still are going to have to be transferred, and that really depends on the, you know, the ferry service and the weather and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's a, just a little bit different clientele. It's a little more short-term problems that we're treating.
Meanwhile, we talk about the people who you've hired and who are working at the clinic. And as you say, cost of living is higher, but you really can't afford to pay people anymore. And they're doing a lot of jobs just to keep the doors open, right? I mean, it's not just providing medical care. Given the staffing needs that you have, people are doing just about everything at your clinic. Is that right?
Yeah, we cover, you know, everything that we possibly can for the patients. A lot of that case management is making sure that they're able to get their medications, they can afford the medications they're getting. We do a lot of phone work with insurance companies and pre-authorizations. And it's spread out across, you know, all the personnel. It's not always just one person. You know, we have to work these things into the clinic routine so that we're making sure everybody gets served.
And Cheryl, I'm sure that there's been times when you've picked up a mop or a broom, and you also do fundraising and all the other things that you have to do.
Yeah, no one is limited. Everybody pretty much will pitch in, and if the floor is sandy when you get there in the morning from the last patient, we all just kick in and try to, you know, get things back in order to make our day go well, because we can't call the housekeeping department, because there really isn't a housekeeping department. We have one housekeeper who comes in twice a week after hours to clean up, but that in between time, especially in the summer, we're emptying, you know, our trash cans, and we're doing that kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes it's touching up paint if somebody, you know, rammed the wheelchair into the side of the wall, or, you know, just trying to keep things going. It's a lot of responsibility for everyone. We kind of spread it all out.
Where does the funding, where does the money come from? Tell us a little bit about funding and how the center is funded.
Well, we have our program funding, you know, the money we earn from our visits, but we depend greatly on our federal funding. We are a community health center, became that FQHC in 2013, and we strongly depend on that funding from them. If we're waiting on the federal government to approve of the CHC funding, you know, for the whole country, and we are hoping we're not facing that funding cliff that we had in 2017, where we're waiting for the funding to be approved. Without that funding, I think the number is like nearly $93 million would be lost across the whole state, and for us, it would affect us greatly, because it would mean partially closing the clinic. It may only be able to stay open during summer months when we do earn more than our expenses because of the increased, you know, census. But right. In the wintertime, it would be really hard to stay open.
How about state and county funding? Any money come from the state or the county?
Well, state funding is, you know, there are grants available at times that we can apply for, and we have received them in the past. We get some local county government funding through occupancy tax, because we do have this increase with, you know, due to the tourist season. We are a nonprofit designation. We are branching out into fundraising. We're going to be putting on the first annual Ocracoke Seafood Festival Health Center benefit. We've had a lot of publicity on that.
It's at the end of August.
It just got a lot more.
August 31st, the Saturday over Labor Day weekend, we expect lots of people. Hmm. We're very excited. So that's basically yeah. that fundraising portion really assists us with special programs we want to start, or we've just had a big repair project at our health center because it was built in 1981, 82. And, you know, with this coastal weather, it just plays havoc with window seal, siding, roofing.
Cheryl treated me to, you know, to the spongy floor near the back door.
Well, that's, you're right. So tell me about the, because you're obviously extremely vulnerable to storms. And I wonder what it's like to stay running during a hurricane. What do you do?
Yeah, that's a major challenge. The threat of hurricanes, even northeast storms, they continue to disrupt ferry service, which that's our lifeline. You can only leave the island by state-run ferry. And there's also been road damage that the state has to continually monitor and repair, and even up to evacuation. I mean, I'm part of the control group that that listens to the county's concerns when a hurricane comes, and you know, it's a county decision with a lot of our input of if and when we're going to do an evacuation. And there's a lot of things weighing on that, but we don't, once that evacuation is called, I really can't hold people to stay at the clinic, you know, to keep working. We try to stay open until just about that last ferry leaves. To give everybody a chance if they want to evacuate, or you know, at least get their house and their property in order for possible damage and you know, danger. And it's very difficult. We try to be the very first people back when the first ferry runs, so we can get back to the clinic, at least get part of that open. We've been fortunate to be able to get some state help from emergency management. We've had a certified emergency response team that brought medical professionals and a physician so that we housed them there at the clinic for about 4 or 5 days in order for anyone who had damage at their home can, you know, get that fixed and before they can get back to work.
You know, we're talking about emergency situations here, but just the sheer isolation of the place, you obviously can't offer all of the services, all the medical services. I can be seen there. The doctor might recommend a test. Then I have to get the test, get off the island maybe, and if the test indicates that I need more service. I mean, what are the challenges of follow-up care once they come to see you in a place like Ocracoke?
Yeah, it's intensive. You know, with the advent of electronic medical record, that really has improved things for the patient, because we can, you know, digitally track a lot of things that before was all paper lists, which I remember that because I'm a retired nurse. I've been associated with the clinic for over 32 years, so I remember those paper lists I used to have to keep. So it's a big improvement with the electronic, but it's still the challenge without a public transportation, you know, service. And it's a challenge to get people off of the island because, you know, till you get to the Outer Banks Hospital and get a certain procedure done, and depending on the preparation for the procedure, it's at least an overnight stay.
Yeah.
For things like colonoscopy and that kind of thing. But yeah, follow up, and especially making sure the patient did get to that appointment.
Right.
That's a huge thing, because we don't know what that weather is that day, and maybe the ferry didn't run on time, so they were going to miss their appointment because they could not get there. So that's a rescheduling, and it's right. Constant keeping in touch with the patient.
Rose,
Cheryl didn't mention, you know, there are EMS on the island, and there I spoke to an EMS worker, a paramedic, who told me a story about, you know, where she works normally in Davidson County. You know, they pick somebody up 20 minutes later, they're at a hospital. But where when she comes out and does one of these long 96-hour shifts on the island, she said that she has time with these patients because it takes so long to get them off the island. So she told me a story about some guy who had a high fever, tourist, was delirious. So they started an IV, gave him some Tylenol, put him in the back of their truck, take him up to the Hatteras Ferry. They were halfway across to Hatteras, and the guy woke up. And she said, I'd never seen that before. But, you know, and then they still had another hour and a half to get to the Outer Banks Hospital, you know, which, so, you know, it's that kind of stuff that I found to be really fascinating about the way that they're having to be sort of more resourceful. Like, you can't be insecure in your medical practice living on Ocracoke, right? Like, you need to feel like, oh, I'm diagnosing this. This is what it is, right?
Yes, we've had, Dr. Baker is extremely skilled in that, because we have people that come in, like you said, they seem like they're in critical condition. We throw all the treatment that, you know, we feel that's appropriate and that they need, but we can't afford to wait 2-3 hours and observe them and make sure, okay, are all our treatments working well? Because at that point, they may be into more severe distress if what we've given them is not enough.
Yeah.
You know, typically somebody who has shortness of breath, you know, could be an asthma attack. You can give them some very quick acting medications, but they wear off. And if you're not, you know, there and just keep repeating treatments, they could, you know, become very life-threatening ill, before we can get them off the island. So we tend to, you know, treat very acutely and get the transportation through, you know, the county EMS, get them, you know, that transportation plan off the island, because you're still, even if it's a trip by helicopter, it's still a 45 minutes usually till the helicopter can get here, and then they have that same amount of travel back. Depending on headwinds, it could be longer. Depending on weather, they may have to go around.
So we have
to really look further in advance than just what we're seeing when they walk in.
It's not for the faint of heart.
Well, you've been covering Rose healthcare obviously all over the state, and certainly in the rural parts of the state. And a lot of what we're hearing here is probably mirrored in other rural parts. But how is this categorically different? And does this mean that there needs to be some sort of different way of understanding from a policy standpoint a place like Ocracoke?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's why my headline was the most remote clinic, because, you know, you think about a place like out west in the mountains and they'll say, well, we're pretty darn remote, but at least you might be able to like get on a snowmobile or something. But this is like, if that ferry's not running, that ferry's not running. If there's fog and the helicopters can't fly, like you're really stuck. Like I was just saying, it's not for the faint of heart, you know. And I do know that policy-wise, you know, there's a new ferry that it's a passenger ferry. It goes to Ocracoke Village from the southern tip of Hatteras Island. So that's like a new transportation option. I know that the Representative John Torbett, who's been out to the island a bunch of times, he's the head of the House Transportation Committee, has really sort of taken an interest in this. But, you know, like having like what Cheryl talked about, that funding cliff, like these FQHCs, federally qualified health centers, they all get this federal funding. And without that, they're really kind of hosed.
Well, without that and the upcoming seafood festival, remind us again, Cheryl, just briefly, because when and where that is.
It's the Ocracoke Seafood Festival Health Center benefit, held at the Berkeley Barn on Ocracoke Island. It is Saturday, August 31st, from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m.
So if you start now, you can get there. Okay.
Right.
If you're living in the triangle. Cheryl Balance is the CEO of the Ocracoke Health Center. Rose Hoban, the founder and editor of North Carolina Health News, thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more information about all of that, including the seafood fundraiser, at our website, stateofthings.org. Just had WUNC's youth reporters cover everything from Sandy Hook to coming out, and we'll talk about it soon on the State of Things. Stay with us.